tweet at TodaySOR.
Have you ever brought a bottle of wine home from your holidays only to find it doesn't taste half as nice as it did when you sipped it under the foreign sun? Well, researchers at Oxford University believe that there are good scientific reasons for this, and next month they'll carry out the biggest multi-sensory experiment ever into the psychology of drinking wine. Tomás Clancy is wine correspondent with the Sunday Business Post, and he joins me now in studio. I didn't realise, Tomás, that there was a psychology, a multi-sensory experiment into the psychology of drinking wine is what's promised. Do you believe that where and when we drink wine influences how it tastes?
I do. I think I hugely believe that. And I think it's, in fact, I think it's well settled. And I suppose I'm very happy that Professor Charles Spence can get money.
He's the man in Oxford.
He's a professor of experimental psychology in Oxford. And I'm glad that he can get money to run a very large experiment on this this fact, because it's very well understood. And I mean, a very good part, a big part of what we do when we're eating and drinking is influenced by the setting in which it happens. The taste perceptions are influenced by what we see in front of us, what we hear, what we smell. Probably the least advanced, the dumbest of all of our senses is our tongue, and in fact it's hugely supported by the ear and the eyes and the nose. These are the ones that they advance the cause.
But Tomás, good wine surely is good wine, and plonk is plonk, and always it'll always be that way.
Well, ostensibly, those descriptions will not change, but the reality is that the way in which we perceive anything is hugely impacted by what we see around us. I mean, the philosopher Merleau-Ponty is hugely into hugely advancing of this idea that all perception is really highly influenced by the environment in which we experience it. And we know that. The first, you step off a plane and you get that waft of incredible heat, like you're stepping out into an oven. And some part of your mind goes, and that changes everything that you perceive. How you perceive, a dull town can look remarkably fantastic. An airport, which you haven't glanced twice at the top or the roof of an airport in Dublin Airport as you're leaving, suddenly you're deeply inspired by Madrid.
And you go along, and when you unpack and get settled, you go and maybe have a meal or a glass of wine or something like that, and it can taste very nice. But would it not be the case that we'll say, if you go out and have a nice dining and wine experience, and that you say, oh gosh, I'd like to bring home a few bottles of that, and you do, that it's the transportation of it, the knocking it around and maybe putting it into the hold of the plane or whatever, that surely can unsettle it. And maybe that would account for why it doesn't taste as well when you bring it home and uncork it at that stage.
It certainly, there's an impact on transportation. But the reality is that if you are looking at, say, a Rosé de Provence, you're looking at something down there. It's piercingly sort of pink, has a beautiful sort of violets and roses sort of aroma coming out of it, and has a lip-smacking sort of acidity. If you're in a very warm, you're there, you're hot, your tongue, your mouth is full of saliva, you're parched, you drink this, your perception of it will be massively altered. You will be perceiving, it'll be rather heightened. It'll be heightened, and you'll receive this. Your brain will receive this as infinitely pleasurable. You bring that home, and you're very cold. You're here in the damp and the wet and the grey, and you pick out something rather pallid and rather piercing, and you're not parched, and your mouth isn't filled with saliva, and you're thinking, I don't like it as much. Whereas here, sort of a rich, warm, spicy Shiraz or a deep purple and blackcurrant, redolent Amarone is going to be a much more pleasant experience.
What about the type of glass one uses? And sorry to be vulgar about
Not
this, but does it make a difference if you drink champagne from a crystal flute or a mug?
It certainly does. And we all know this when we're drinking tea and coffee and hot chocolate. If I bring you a hot chocolate in a little delicate sort of a very fine-boned china, you're going to have one experience. But we all have the mug we like. We have our favoured cup for tea, we have the mug we like for hot chocolate, because these things make a huge impact. The subtle difference in the width of the mug, the way, the thickness of the top of the mug and the thickness of the top of the wine glass affect where the hot chocolate or the wine, in this case, will be delivered to the mouth and how it's received.
On that point, by pure coincidence, I found myself tipping a beaker of coffee into my mug this morning and I did say to colleagues, it tastes far better from the mug, so
Excellent. Maybe
your case rests. But what about the efforts that maybe one likes to make? How do you recreate the perfect environment for enjoying a bottle of wine that you do bring back from holidays then?
Well, I mean, the thing about it is that you want to look and see what the experience was. First of all, light is a hugely important part of how we experience anything. And, you know, the reality is that light impacts on our eyes. The cones and rods are involved in an electrochemical exchange to create the colours that we see inside us. And that, very visibly and psychologically from testing in large samples, creates a different experience that we now relate to what we call taste. So having the right light, having the indicia of quality or luxury, so good, a lovely warm fire, a very nice glass with fine-boned materials that we're feeling on our fingers as we move it. All of these things advance the cause of the wine that we're drinking.
What's your own favourite place to drink wine?
At home, surrounded by family, with white tablecloths and, you know, the chatter of convivial company is absolutely, I find wine tastes really, you know, anticipatorily fabulous in this context, and also in the context of chat and engagement. But then, on the other hand, sitting with a chilled glass of Chablis, looking out over the hills of Chablis, sweeping up and down rolling hills with a little glint of descending sunlight, it's a fine place
to drink. Tough job. Somebody has to do it.
Horrendous.
Now, you've been following the work of Professor Charles Spence for some time. So
yes.
What are you expecting? What new information might be coming your way?
I think the first thing that's going on is that he's looking at colour perceptions is one of the things that he's looking at. So putting people into room all green, all black, all blue. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Heston Blumenthal, and he did work with Heston Blumenthal, has been doing with food for some time. So they're really just transferring this already decently acquired knowledge to the arena of wine. And in the wine arena, this has also been perceived for some time. So colour is a huge impact. Colour and light intensity and heat, plus music. Music turns out to be a very important. The sound ambience turns out to be extremely important for how we perceive this kind of activity. So classical music will give you one type of perception when you're drinking it. And in fact, in Edinburgh University, they put the same glass of wine, played thumping rock music, sort of a bit of jazz and some classical music, and asked people to describe what they saw. And surprisingly enough, people changed their perceptions for that.
Tomás Clancy, wine correspondent with the Sunday Business Post. Sadly, the Tribune no longer with us. Thank you very much indeed for coming to studio.